Hey everybody, welcome back to Cold Case Murder Mysteries. I'm your host Ryan Krause, joining you once again for the next episode in the Mindhunter series. When we left off last time, we were talking about Holden meeting Debbie in the bar and the implications of that meeting moving forward. Now, women are often agents of change for stagnant men, and here we see this young woman asking Holden what he does as a precursor to knowing the problem, and therefore what the solution will be. Holden says he teaches hostage negotiation for the FBI, so it's apparent to Debbie that he's stuck somewhere emotionally, and since she is one of those monsters I mentioned, but a good one, one that makes us afraid of change for the better, she'll fix that. So we need to hear some type of implication that she is a healer, a doctor of some sort, a savior, because that is what transcendent characters do, and also what their allies do for them. She tells him that she's on the way to getting a PhD in sociology, so she's going to be a doctor, and he suddenly realizes something. That's a deficit for him. He doesn't have the education he needs to understand the criminals in society today, meaning why they do what they do. She starts talking about these ideas and asking if Holden's read this or that, but he finally just realizes he's ignorant and asks her to make a reading list. He realizes he's that far behind on all of this. She's enlightening him as to the path he needs to travel in order to get to his goal. And again, that's what your physical reality is. It is manifesting the necessity of your emotional life. Everything you see in front of you, from objects to people, is creating a manifested version of your emotional world. So here is Holden with an emotional deficit of needing to become something. And so, in physicality, the universe brings the necessary conduit of change in the form of Debbie. And this normally happens in a story, you know, this is called the B story, this normally happens somewhere around the end of Act 1 when the protagonist is heading into the new world, and the reason it happens at that point is because symbolically, that is akin to entering adulthood. So in the same way you would find a partner in adulthood who is not your mother or father and is instead a romantic partner, here, in a story, the B story, or the love interest, usually comes into play somewhere around 30% of the way in, give or take, near the end of Act 1 or the beginning of Act 2. Anyhow, Holden realizes he needs to become educated. This young woman is having a transcendent effect on him by saying he needs to ditch thinking like a Fed, ditch the old ways, and begin thinking from a sociological perspective. And it's a great moment because, as this enlightenment occurs, they go from the bar to a room with a band playing really loud rock music, which symbolizes the vibration and sound associated with the literal definition of enlightenment. Deep, repetitive vibrations leading to loud sounds and then images and light. That's the effect this young woman is having on him, and he's not used to being in a place like this emotionally. So physically, they manifest that idea by having him as the only stiff-looking Fed in a suit watching this concert. But on an emotional level, what's happening is that she's getting him moving again. She understood the hostage negotiation thing as being stuck, enlightened him, and then to symbolize him moving in that still dark and uncomfortable place, but doing so reluctantly, even as a fish out of water, she gets him to dance. He starts, then stops, because it's too soon. He wants to take baby steps, because he's afraid to let go and be that person. He isn't dressed for it emotionally, so to speak, so he'll need to change, which means that this will also have to manifest in the form of him taking off his clothes and merging with this young woman as symbolic rebirth, something that is being foreshadowed by them moving together physically while dancing and her enlightening him. there is only one truth, and so in this universe, in terms of physics, the one thing we know can't exist in the middle between the beginning and end is called the naked singularity. It's an impossibility in our existing binary universe and can only be achieved at the birth and death of it. The naked singularity is the thing from which everything is born or reborn, and so Holden will ultimately need to get nude with this woman, merge, and be reborn symbolically as that naked singularity, or the one, with a big bang, now that she has enlightened him. In terms of Debbie's name, right, if we look at Holden, his name is Holden Ford, and we talked about the implications of Ford as the car being the straight line moving forward along the road of life, because the universe is essentially just a straight line of white light. So, if we think about moving along that straight line of white light, what is it that allows us to do that? How do we move forward in evolution? Well, the manner in which we do that is we merge new ideas or emotional technology with material technology, and the combination of those two things pushes us ahead. So, if we're talking about Holden Ford, he needs to merge with some sort of technological idea in the form of education in order to allow both of those aspects of evolution, emotional and physical, to be facilitated. Therefore, since his name is Holden Ford, and we're in the United States, and Debbie represents education, what institution above and beyond any other would tell you that Debbie is combining Holden Ford with technology and engineering? Well, the answer, of course, would be MIT. So her name is Debbie Mitford, MIT Ford. And again, she's named that way because she is merging the straight line going forward with the idea of being educated about technology. And that technology, in specificity, is the human brain. Now, again, we talked about Mrs. Miller. So here we have Miss Mitford, right? And the MIT, again, if we look at those specific letters, you have an M followed by a straight line, followed by two crossing straight lines with MIT. So the idea is that the alphabet, the first half of it, ends at M. And so that's how we get the Mrs. Miller thing, right? So we have Mitford. So you have M, then you have one straight line, and then you have crossing straight lines. So now that she has crossed with Holden, we have, instead of Ford, Mitford. So, at this point, we know she has to begin educating Holden. Now, again, when we come upon transcendent characters, we understand that what they are trying to transcend to is being the father. And again, we should look for words such as monon that allow us that transcendence from M to N and extracting the O. So, if we're talking about something involving the Father or God in a religious context, and we also need a word like that with the MN and double O's, what would Debbie talk to Holden about in order to accommodate that? Well, she says that Holden looks like a Mormon, and that her dad, her father, is a Mormon. As Holden is the Jesus character with the intention of transcending to become the Father or God, Debbie is here mentioning her father and his likeness to Holden so that Holden can be validated in his plight to wanting to transcend to be that person, in the same way that a boyfriend would try to be like the father of a woman in order to transcend to becoming her husband. So now this young woman mentions Durkheim and something called labeling theory, which suggests that crime is a response to something that is wrong in society. That's exactly my position. However, the sociological aspect of that theory indulges the social veil rather than technological progression. Our issues are solved by way of technology ultimately, and never truly until that necessity is met. One side or the other in the war for women's bodies can win a battle at any given time, but the war has an endgame of transformation, which is specifically extraction of the womb. That ends the necessity of gender. It's just like guns. They'll go away when our technological evolution toward biological immortality, or AI, makes them impractical in a way that they'll be viewed like harmless toys. Laws and agreement will not change anything permanently. Transformation does. And that's what this show is about. Becoming. But Holden is afraid to go to this place where he'll become the naked singularity and be reborn. So we know the thing that takes him there has to satisfy two requirements. It has to be yellow to symbolize his fear or cowardice, and it has to take that concept of the capital V, like in Virginia earlier, as the disunified binary universe needing to merge with another in order to become whole or reborn, and bring unity between body and mind. In that light, this young woman, who again finally announces her name is Debbie, leads Holden to a yellow Volkswagen Beetle. The logo used on the VW Beetle is a W, or two merged Vs, rising to become a single V above them. And of course, the universe needs to tell us this is a symbolic rebirth for Holden, and it's being delivered by Debbie. So, in the context of our daily lives, what is it that tells us about symbolic rebirth more than anything else? Well, Debbie says it's her birthday. So what the universe will do now is require emotional vulnerability on Holden's part in relation to his emotional wound, specifically the emotional conflict caused by the disunity he suffered from it. That will need to be dressed up as manifested physical conflict, so look for the V like we did in Virginia or the Volkswagen. When they go back to Debbie's apartment, Holden begins talking about a certain place where a whole lot of conflict happened. Vietnam. He elaborates by talking about guys who were so afraid to go back there that they ran away. They deserted and went AWOL. Of course, we know a border has to be involved, or bridge, one that suggests they ran from the place which was symbolically located down the hill and toward the one which was up the hill, away from their fear of the dark. And that's when he says the scared young men ran from the U.S. border north into Canada. The theme running beneath this is that they're scared and don't want to fight because they're afraid they'll die and never come back again to be the same person. They'll lose themselves. Emotionally, that's what Holden is afraid to do. Let go of his fears. Get out of that emotionally born hostage situation in which he's imprisoned himself and fight that war, even if it means losing himself and never being able to find his way back. Just look at how his emotional world is physically manifested here. He is chasing after people who are trying to run away to ascension. Those people who are running away are symbolic of him on an emotional level, and so he is manifesting a solution in the absence of emotional reconcilability and going to get them to bring them back to where they're supposed to be. He says he was the one who corralled them and sent them back there, to that place down the hill where their worst fears lived. And now here he is, reflecting in the moment while telling us, and realizing his ironic fate. He has to follow, maybe not to Vietnam, but to a place where he's afraid to die emotionally. Now again, this merger these two, the circle and straight line, are about to undergo will lead to Holden's ascension, a rebirth, a way out of the circle or cycle where he's stuck, and help him along the pathway to rise like the white light of God or universal truth to become the one. So what we need to foreshadow that is a physically manifested three-dimensional circle or sphere connected to a straight line or cylinder in which the release of redshifted light will cause that which is both white and transparent to rise. When all that can ever be known is enlightened, we've achieved deification. So we will see that here symbolically, because that's what their meeting is leading to. And once that happens, then you can become the naked singularity and be reborn. The window dressing used for that plight in this scene, as ridiculous as it sounds, will be smoking a bong with a bulbous bottom and straight tube. Now again, the place Holden fears is the dark waters of the unconscious mind down the hill in the mirror universe. So not only does Debbie bring him a glass of wine to symbolize consuming the dark waters instead of letting them consume you, but the bong is also dark colored and has water in the bottom, symbolizing the abyss where the monsters live. And that smoke, of course, is going to rise from the abyss. So the idea here is that the ascension of the white and transparent smoke, or the white light of God, only ascends reborn or cleansed in that form at the top if it goes through the abyss of the dark waters below. Your entire reality, again, is just a storefront window for the same simple story, but the mannequins are dressed and posed in various ways that make them seem different. Beneath that facade, though, it's always the same thing, no matter what, and out of necessity, because there is only one goal. Now, the goal for Holden over the short term here is to immerse himself in the dark waters, specifically his brain. So the bong delivers the white light to that place. The naked singularity is a brain. So Debbie takes a hit, and given that she's far more enlightened than he is at this point, she handles it perfectly. It's not too much for her. But when Holden tries to hit the bong, his body rejects it, and he can't stop coughing to reflect that. It's too much for him to take in at once. Of course, a bong hit for a novice, again, is too much at once, and that's the point. She just overdosed him on enlightenment, which is symbolized brilliantly by her actually lighting the bong for him, and he now realizes that in order to be able to handle this ascension of the white light, he needs to transform, or he will fail. He will choke. That's what we call it when you don't live up to your performance. But as he was afraid to hit the bong and couldn't handle it once he did, we understand that he's going to run away from his calling in this moment, and they are not going to merge in sex with him becoming the naked singularity in this moment. As we all do sometimes in the face of scary change, we run back to the circle, back to what we know, what's comfortable. We run back to our ego. To represent that, the show cuts right at that moment of Holden not being able to handle the bong hit and shows him doing what and where. What did we say? He was running away, right? So we cut to Quantico and they show him running. So he's running at Quantico and within the symbolic framework of his ego comforting him once again. As long as he keeps running from the truth, he will never have to stop. But what do we know he wants to do? He wants to stop running from his calling. So right then, he literally stops running. But what is he once he stops running at this moment? He's stuck. He needs to transform. On that note, we know he'll need to indulge a narrative that is not only about a hostage negotiation, symbolizing his ego, but also transforming, and even more specifically, finding a way to transform. A way to transcend what you are, the ego, to become your authentic self. In that light, Debbie takes Holden to see the film Dog Day Afternoon, which recounts a story in which a man, played by Al Pacino, holds people hostage at a bank as he tries to get the money necessary for his partner's surgical transformation from being a man to being a woman. The film recounts the situation as a resolution is negotiated from both sides. Yet because this transformation is physically manifested through criminal sociopathy, it fails and ends in tragedy. The transformation does not happen. Holden walks out of the theater, realizing he felt badly for the characters, despite their behavior, and Debbie says, "Yeah, you have empathy." And a light suddenly goes on for him. Because that's it. That's the emotional bridge between him and the killers. Empathy. He comments that the characters in the film were also disturbed, but it was, again, the fact that he felt badly for them that allowed him to relate. And when we finally build that emotional bridge between two places or people, what often follows is a physical manifestation of such. So here, we're finally going to see Holden and Debbie having sex, forming the naked singularity, specifically at the point of a binary big bang in the form of orgasms, from which Holden officially emerges reborn as the One. And they go at it again right away, symbolically showing his newly discovered willingness and passion to go to that place of emotional transformation inside the womb and be reborn. Of course, that's being physically manifested with his thrusting during the sex, suggesting a nearly obsessive desire to keep going back to that place, to keep going inside, and by the end of season one, doing this, again, obsessively, will ironically also cause his collapse. That will happen to Holden emotionally and physically because that is exactly what happens to the universe through its process of evolution from total darkness at the beginning to total enlightenment at the end before it finally collapses. The same process that allows enlightenment is also the process that causes collapse, and so we have that similarity, that parallel, within Holden's story. And so the idea, upon enlightenment and finally collapse, is that one is reborn again so that the process may repeat itself infinitely. That's life. But for now, as the transcendent character, like Christ, his job will be to spread the word about the knowledge he plans to bring from the darkness into light to eradicate ignorance. He goes to his boss the next morning and says the FBI's knowledge is basically antiquated and obsolete, exemplified by the newest books in their library being 5 years old. He wants to bring psychology to the forefront by getting educated at the University of Virginia. Again, notice the usage of the V in Virginia here as window dressing for the binary universe where this knowledge is truly acquired. Now, his boss says they can't do that because the Bureau views psychology as being for backroom boys, meaning that kind of hocus-pocus can't be brought into the light. It's fine for backroom discussions, but the FBI has no plans of legitimizing it in a way that brings it into public view. They keep it down the hill in the abyss, like the universe does, emotionally. So we already know where Holden's journey is going to have to start at Quantico. In the basement, down the hill, in the abyss. But for now, he gets funding to audit classes and is introduced to the concept of nature versus nurture. The teacher asks, are criminals born or are they formed? Now, if you recall, Holden's early experiences around Debbie have all been loud, from the music at the bar, to the coughing, to the music on her record player, to their voices trying to talk over these things, and that volume, again, is derived from vibration, which makes sound and then light, equating to enlightenment. The louder the sound, the more enlightened. So here, as class ends, Holden approaches the teacher in the library, and what does that tell us? This man is going to leave him ignorant. That quiet is telling us that this is not the path. In a library, you have to whisper. So Holden whispers his desire to be mentored by this man, to start a dialogue with him. And the guy says no. He won't even shake the hand of an FBI agent, calling it a sign of the times. He gets up and leaves, making Holden feel like an outsider. The idea here is that Holden wants the man to come along with him on the journey, but Holden is the one, so he can't partner with someone who shares his personal goal. If he's going to partner with someone, it will have to be with someone who has a separate pathway that causes them to merge. And since the theme here is going back inside, Since Holden left Quantico to try to find this man to partner with him and failed, the solution will be to go back inside there. Now, Holden, as Mr. Miller, so to speak, is supposed to be symbolically ignorant of the letter N, as the letter N is what transcends the second half of the alphabet, coming out of the womb in the middle, again making words like Monon and Mormon and Median very important. Therefore, when Holden goes to recall the man's name, he remembers it as Leo, not Leon. The man corrects him by adding the N. Of course, the refusal of the handshake says there is no connection here. And on a side note, if I'm not mistaken, I think this is probably some sort of an inside joke because David Fincher's middle name is Leo. So Holden goes back to Debbie, and we know she's going to have to give him the answer to his woes in a manifested way. Let's look for the dark waters hidden by white light. There we go. In this scene, they're each drinking a dark soda out of a white cup. Now, Holden is still refusing to set off on his journey into the dark waters of the unconscious mind. He's refusing to go down into the abyss. So if you wanted someone to comb the darkness looking for the truth, what would you do? Well, Debbie takes a dark comb from his pocket and tosses it right into his soda cup. She's saying, you won't get what you need through that professor. You need to comb through the dark waters of the unconscious mind yourself. The comb is immersed in the dark waters, and that's what Holden needs. Of course, a comb brings organization to the head, manifesting the emotional plight of what he's doing, but in physicality. He needs to go back inside to comb the abyss to find out what's going on inside these killers' heads and organize it. That's the point of showing the comb. He has to go right to the source of that darkness, the killers themselves. So the comb is symbolic of bringing the structure of the mind into play here. Being a transcendent character means being both the teacher and the student, and not one or the other. Holden wanted that guy to be the teacher, and he would be the student, or the child. But here's where we see he learned from that mistake. Since he learned about transformation by Debbie taking him to see Dog Day Afternoon, essentially as her student, he now shows the film to his recruits at the academy, which allows transcendence from student to teacher. That's what he needs to do, become a student who thereby intends to become the teacher, like Jesus is a student who becomes God, the teacher. The student is the body, which is exactly why we actually have the term student body. The teacher is the mind, and if Holden wants to be the mind hunter, he can't work with that teacher and keep deferring to him. And that's why when he asks if the guy's name is Leo, and it's actually Leon, the missing N says there will be no transcendence to the other side with him. Again, they literally call a group of students a student body for the same reason. That's why a teacher stands in front of a classroom arranged like the Big Bang, with the singularity, or the mind, expanding outward into a group of many students. All of the information and the knowledge is at the front of the room in the singularity, and then it expands outward into the group of students, same way it does in the universe. The teacher stands while the students sit, meaning the brain is above at the top, having ascended, or above the bridge, or straight line, and communicates with those maturing or transforming in the abyss below. So, that knowledge transfer between the two leads to symbolic deification. If you successfully retain all of the knowledge delivered, your grade is an A+, which shows the first letter of the alphabet, or Alpha, or the One, God, followed by how that was achieved in the form of the crossing straight lines of the plus sign. Or you could think of it in terms of GPA, with a 4.0 GPA being the perfect GPA, with the four stages of birth, life, death, deity, so the 4.0 equals deification. So, Now that Holden has been the student and the teacher for this film, we should learn something about people who indulge that successful structural element utilized in transcendence. He points out to his students a flaw that the hostage negotiator makes. The man doesn't remain calm, and because of that, he ends up scaring the people he's negotiating with. So Holden realizes he can't be afraid to engage these killers, the monsters. He has to be calm. He has to stay calm. And just like he can't make them afraid, again, he can't be scared either, or they'll see it. The lack of confidence, the fear, like it happens in the wild. If you're the alpha, the one, the rest of them all know it. And the easiest way to assert confidence as the one in nature is to be calm, to literally look as though you couldn't possibly give a fuck because you don't have to. Because in truth, those are the only creatures who don't get preyed upon out there. They survive. That's what Holden needs to become to handle this journey. So in this moment, as he teaches the recruits, we learn something about why this film moved him that he didn't want Debbie to know. But we do. He talks about the protagonist, meaning Sonny or Al Pacino, making all sorts of outrageous demands from the hostage negotiator. But among all of his desires, the one thing he wanted more than anything else was for his wife to return. And do you see it now? The wife, extracting the zero to become the one, left him, and so he symbolically tried to manifest a circumstance in which his boyfriend, a man, another straight line, gets transformed to being a woman, or the circle. That just happened to Holden with the colleague leaving the bar and his very own Mrs. Miller, in the form of Debbie, taking the spot. He transformed that man back into being a woman, but emotionally. He did it through enlightenment. In the film he's showing his students, that plight is no different, and so that enlightenment, or oncoming realization, is symbolized by the protagonist being named Sonny. And the twist, since he couldn't let go of his wife, the circle, or zero, or O, and wanted her to come back, is that his name, Sonny, is spelled with an O instead of a U. A U is a broken circle, allowing emotional freedom, which is something he couldn't find, in the same way Sonny Corleone with an O from The Godfather couldn't change his ways. And now here, as we learn the hostage taker, or abductor, in Dog Day Afternoon, won't escape the emotional prison in which he's trapped, what does the character, enhanced by Pacino's bravado, become famous for? Well, we know it has to be a physical manifestation of emotional stagnancy or being trapped emotionally, being in an emotional prison. So he is famous for running around screaming the name of a physical prison, Attica. Attica was the location of a notorious prison riot protesting stagnant, irreconcilable conditions inside that physical prison, so Pacino uses it here emotionally to express what's going on in his head. It's irreconcilable. Yet, it's in this revelation about the man desperately wanting his wife to come back that Holden makes a parallel between Mr. Miller and Sonny. Both of them refuse to let go. But let go of what? The answer is love. But more specifically, love that has gone and will never return, leaving a hole in its place. That hole is the abyss, and Holden needs to go down there to see it. But he's afraid. Both Mr. Miller and Sonny were holed up inside wombs where they both demanded change to come to them in the form of their wives or the circle returning. That's what children do. They wait to be nurtured by a parent instead of creating the resources through change on their own. But the change you want to come back to you through your efforts is change created by your own resources. So now that Holden has learned this lesson that he must take the straight line out of the circle to create change, how will the universe show us that growth? Well, again, in this show and in the world, growth is green. And if that growth comes from consuming the dark waters of the unconscious mind, so to speak, then how would that play out? Well, at Quantico, where is the one place where Holden can exchange his own resources for nurture and receive change for his efforts? The answer, of course, is the cafeteria. After getting permission from his boss to consult the behavioral science unit, Holden goes to the cafeteria. Now, what do we specifically need to see here? What's the lesson? Well, if you want the circle to return and do so in abundance, then the path to that goal is the straight line of using your own resources to make that change. In line with that idea, Holden stands at the register waiting to buy his lunch. He hands the woman working it a green bill, or straight line, and what does he receive? Change in the form of circles, or coins. It's a manifested, symbolically relevant realization Holden is having, one that Mr. Miller and Sonny couldn't accomplish, because physical change comes from emotional movement. Now, the universe, of course, is going to have to give him a reality check here as well. So when he gives her the straight line of the cash, making her a straight line, or one, and she gives him the circle of the coins in return, it represents men letting women, or the circle, transform to become ones. Accordingly, they use an older woman, meaning the circle is becoming obsolete, and as soon as they make the exchange, she disappears. Her disappearance after exchanging the circle for the straight line represents the dissolution of the female gender through change. When she, the circle, disappears, there is only the one. But what do we know about the one? It starts as a redundant one, or two ones, that cross paths, because what's going to happen is that when we extract the circle, we're going to have two straight lines. So in this exact moment, with the cashier going off screen, we know that we can expect a man, or one, to cross paths with Holden, and we will know he's the partner Holden has been searching for because he will show a propensity for doing one thing, consuming the dark waters of the unconscious mind. So here he comes. This is our guy. His name is Special Agent Bill Tench. Now, how is he going to tell us he has an appetite for consuming the dark waters? Well, he's holding a coffee cup. Now, how will we know he's going to ascend or is seeking to ascend in the same way that Holden is doing by way of consuming these dark waters of the unconscious mind? How is it going to take them higher, so to speak? Well, Bill's a smoker, so he uses the cigarette to burn away that straight line toward the goal, using the past, aka redshifted light, as fuel. And we know that Holden is going to see this because even just the night before, in the bar, he literally stopped and watched Debbie as she did the same thing, realizing that this was someone that he needs to meet. Now, we know Holden's issue here is that he is unable to rise. He's unable to ascend. He's stuck where he is. And so by seeing Bill's smoke, he realizes Bill is a conduit to being able to do that. But what he says to Bill, in order to convey that symbolically, is that he doesn't smoke. And Bill recognizes what that means, even if just in the subtext. So what he does is that he starts talking about Holden not being able to move up the ladder. And Holden then, realizing that Bill understands him, goes on to say that he feels like he's only making lateral moves. He's only going sideways. So Bill suggests to him that he could be the conduit to help Holden rise. And that's the point of the smoke. And of course, Holden is like the cigarette too. His past is driving him forward, burning his desire. Now, we also understand Bill is interested in ascension because even though he holds the coffee cup down low where the dark waters would be, guess where the coffee is located? Up high, right next to them. It's saying that together these two are going to elevate the knowledge of what's down in the dark waters, bringing it up to eye level in the light where everybody else can see it. And of course, what does the caffeine of coffee do? It's uplifting. It gets you high. Just like the bong with the weed smoke getting him high, they use the coffee to symbolize Bill's arrival as Holden's means of getting the psychology of the dark waters out of the basement at Quantico, and also the province of backroom boys, and into the light above, where it can be realized. Enlightenment. Now, we need to know that Bill understands Holden is stuck. So he says, most guys your age don't want to go back to school because they feel it undermines their authority. Yet he also knows Holden is an instructor. So he notices that Holden is willing to be both student and teacher and is conveying his realization of it. But then he also realizes the teacher Holden needs is not at UVA. So Bill mentions that most guys are busy working their way upwards or ascending. Holden, admitting he's stuck, without saying it, feigns movement by saying, well, I guess I'm moving my way sideways. Bill sees the frustration with only making lateral moves and believes he has an opportunity for ascension if they merge. Just to clarify that he sees Holden's potential, we need to hear Bill explicitly suggest Holden is like the blue nova he's driving. So, a blue nova is basically a young, unusually bright star representing Holden here, and therefore, Bill says Holden is what they, at the FBI, refer to as a blue flamer. Holden is unfamiliar, and Bill tells him it means a bright young guy like himself who is so eager to get where he's going that he has a bright blue flame shooting out of his ass. Holden asks if that's bad. Bill tells him to take it slowly because he'll get there in the end. Holden explains that he's just trying to become a better instructor, and Bill makes him an offer. If you recall, the colleague who had the beer with Holden had little time for him, and then that time ran out. He represented Act 1 of the binary universe. The second guy Holden approached was the professor at UVA, who also had little time for him, and then that time ran out, causing him to walk away like the last guy. That was Act 2. So the person Holden needs to meet next is a third times the charm type deal because the structure goes birth, life, death, deity. These two ones, Holden and Bill, are the two straight lines that need to cross, like we see on the crucifix, so that's the reason they cross paths here. Now again, if Holden is trying to become the one, why is there this incessant need to find the right partner? Why does he want two people? Well, if you recall from the warehouse, when the security guard and the secretary were utilized to represent the dual evolutionary traits of detection and integrity, we have the same thing here. Holden symbolizes the detection aspect, as he is relentless about uncovering new ideas, theories, and anything related, often recklessly and without regard for grounded logic, which means Bill will need to represent the integrity side. He will be the guy who calls bullshit on Holden's crazy ideas, who, like we see in evolution, forces Holden to prove the plane can fly before taking flight so that they don't crash in search of the things only Holden can find. That's the idea. One cannot work without the other. Detection and integrity. That's what we do as humans. Now, as the singularity is the oldest element of the universe, and is the only facet of it to possess complete integrity, this scenario requires Bill, representing that integrity, to be older than Holden. Until that integrity was compromised in the Big Bang, there was nothing to detect, nor any reason to do so, along with no ability by intelligent life. Not for a while, at least. So Bill, the integrity, is older than Holden, the detection. Now, if you work integrity and detection straight through our evolutionary narrative, reverse engineering to the end, what is revealed? The true identity of the Father, or white light, our authentic identity, not the ego. Just like the true identity of a serial killer would be revealed upon reverse engineering the killer's world back to the point of origin, the same is true of our plight to achieve universal truth. So now, knowing that, look at the initials, meaning the first letter of each of those values, integrity and detection. What are they? ID. And what does ID abbreviate? Identification. It shows you who you are. And look at how those two letters are arranged. Just like I said, I first, then D. Integrity precedes detection in evolution, so it does the same in that word. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life can be overwhelming, and many people are burned out without even knowing it. Symptoms can include lack of motivation, feeling helpless or trapped, detachment, fatigue, and more. I know that I often feel like I work too much and don't take enough time for myself. Have you ever felt burned out? What did that feel like to you? We associate burnout with work, but that's not the only cause. Any of our roles in life can lead us to feel burned out, and BetterHelp Online Therapy wants to remind you to prioritize yourself. Talking with someone can help you figure out what's causing stress in your life. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. Cold Case Murder Mysteries listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/CCMM. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/CCMM. So Bill and Holden agree to help each other, which means they have merged. But now that it's happened, what it means is that Holden is going to be exchanging the circle for the straight line. So slowly, over the course of the show, as Bill and Holden get closer, we need these two characters to drift away from the women whose company they keep. Of course, like Mrs. Miller and Sonny's wife, Debbie intends to leave and never return by the end of season one, and her foremost reason for doing so is that Holden becomes someone else. He transforms and becomes obsessed with becoming the one. Alone. Recognizing that, Debbie will leave him that way. But for now, in this moment, we have a demanding dramatic necessity. Holden has just undergone symbolic rebirth, which is slowly going to take him closer to Bill, a 1, and away from Debbie, a 0. So as he makes this agreement with Bill, we need to symbolize the nudity of symbolic rebirth again, creating the naked singularity. Yet Holden is clearly not going to sleep with Bill. So to kill two birds with one stone, so to speak, the show cuts right then to Holden climaxing from sex with Debbie at her apartment, showing us the symbolic rebirth requirement. Now, of course, since that symbolic rebirth just happened, what are they going to do? Manifest the idea of Holden, the straight line, drifting away from the circle, in the form of telling Debbie he has to leave right after so he can get up early to start this new endeavor. She, the circle, wants him to stay, but he puts the job first, meaning specifically Bill, who is the other one that he needs to merge with. So he is slowly leaving behind the circle for the one, and doing so not only emotionally, but physically on the path to becoming whole, to becoming the one. Now, how would the universe sneak in crossing straight lines right here in a broken circle to say that Holden has broken the circle to indulge the crossing of straight lines as symbolized by his partnership with Bill that is going to eliminate Debbie? Well, what type of clothing is white can be molded to a broken or open circle and even make a straight line while having a name starting with crossing straight lines? That answer is a white t-shirt. Holden has it rolled up around his neck like a broken circle. Remember the U? And he says he has to leave. That's what Christ does. And notice that that broken circle of white light is between the body and mind. That's what ascension does. Going upward, break the circle, and turn that circle into the straight line. So here we have a white t-shirt that is formed into a semicircle around his neck, symbolizing the breaking of the circle. That's what Christ does. He leaves the circle because he has to get up early, transformed by his rebirth as the One. So at this point, Holden is officially heading out onto the road, or straight line, for the first time with Bill. Now, to understand it visually, the road has two sides, one going forward and one backward, representing time going forward and backward, but ironically also still in the same direction and arriving in the same place as we see in the infinite loop. If that sounds confusing, think of being able to drive straight anywhere on the globe, and as you did, the road was created before your eyes. No matter where you drive in a straight line on the globe, and no matter how far you go, that straight line will eventually make a loop and bring you right back to the start. So, if Bill and Holden are driving on this road, and it never ends, anyone they pass going the opposite direction would wind up in the same place at the culmination. They would take the straight line in a circle, so no matter which way they went, the destination would be the same at the end. Now, fear is what held Holden back from this pursuit, which is represented by yellow. But growth is what's forcing him to conceal that fear. So what we see on both sides of the road is something to symbolize that growth. Tall green stalks of corn ascending and using their sheaths to hide what beneath? Yellow. Of course, the universe wants you to pay attention to what is being said on the radio. So when you look at the corn, how does it remind you to listen? Well, what do they call those things hidden inside the stalk? Ears. So these two are on the road now, taking that straight line toward transcendence. But what do we know about this straight line? It has to be suspended emotionally in the form of a bridge, or you fall into the abyss, right? So here's the point of telling you about the ears of corn. This is what you need to listen to. The message is coming. So to signal Holden's acknowledgement that he's listening and that this is leading to change, right after the DJ conveys the information, what does Holden do? He changes the station and a new song comes on. Now, like we said, if this straight line is a bridge that must be kept suspended, what are these men doing? Holding the line. So what song comes on the radio at that moment Holden changes the station? Hold the Line. Of course, to hold the line and complete the evolutionary narrative, you have to cross two sets of straight lines and extract each of their zeros in order to symbolize the binary plight of going from 10 to 11. So, of course, the name of the band is exactly that. Two sets of crossing straight lines in the form of T, followed by two sets of the letter O, representing the circle. So the band's name, very simply, is Toto, T-O-T-O. And on the album cover, what is shown are two hands holding either side of a string or rope, the line, taut, while directly beneath it, in the abyss, so to speak, down the hill, is a knife blade pointed upward, ready to kill if the straight line goes limp and someone goes down the hill. A limp or sagging straight line makes a semicircle, a place where you go down the hill and can't get back up because it's too steep. So you have to hold the line emotionally. Now, remember the MM or Mr. Miller and how he refused to extract the circle? Well, we need to hear our guys tell their class when they arrive and explicitly that the combination of two redundant M's and an O is obsolete at this point. Sounds strange, right? So how do we do that? Well, the scene cuts inside a building where Bill is doing a slideshow while explaining that a certain formula no longer works for solving crimes. And again, we know, due to structural inevitability, it has to be something with the initials MMO. So what is it? Motive means opportunity. MMO. Now, if you listen to my show regularly, in the past, you would have heard me mention that what and why are the mother and father of drama. What is the universe itself, meaning the mother, and why is the father? The combination of those two things gives birth to offspring in the form of something called who, the one, the chosen one. So when we reverse engineer the universe, or even a serial killer's crimes, we ask what and why, which, when answered, tell us who. If we know what happened, and we know why it happened, we know who did it. So when the internet was introduced, those values, what, why, and who, were disguised within the social veil as meaning World Wide Web instead. But the only location that actually exists in this universe in terms of a destination is the place where the sequence of what plus why equals who. And because it's a binary universe, the structural elements inherent within dictate that the only God destined to be there when we arrive is ourselves having matured to becoming deified through an alternating process of being student and teacher. When seeing his identity as our own, we understand the hourglass construction of our binary world means only two things are available to you: transcendence and irony. That reality dictates, on a structural level, that we must transcend to an ironic fate. There is not another possibility. It's structural. And the only ironic fate possible in that framework is that we believe God or the Creator to be anybody other than us, but in truth, He can only be us. The binary system, like the hourglass, allows only transcendence to irony. So when you transcend, it is inherent within the construction that it is too an ironic fate. You are looking for yourself, but it is your authentic identity and not your ego. So we start as the Jesus character and become the God character. Go from the ego to the authentic self. That's where the idea of getting what you need instead of what you want comes from. You want to remain in the circle, safe, not having to mature. But since the only person coming back for us is ourselves, the only way back to the circle and back to the comfort of the mother's womb is forward, back to the beginning. Bill tells the room of cops in front of them that we are now not only wondering why the killer did it, but why he did it in a particular way. And the answer to understanding, he says, is psychology. That's when Holden gets up and suggests that a person's past, specifically their childhood, can have an effect on how they develop into adults. This is him going down into the abyss and coming back up with his knowledge. He's going to have to walk a tightrope here, though. And why? Because this place where he's been down in the abyss, where he found this enlightenment, is unknown to his audience. Like it scared him, it will scare them. And suddenly, Holden goes off on a tangent about why we behave the way we do. He starts talking about philosophers and theologians, the playground of Shakespeare, Dostoevsky, Freud. He says the greatest minds in history have been fascinated by the vagaries of behavior. But what Bill realizes is that Holden is going off the rails. The greatest minds in history sure as hell are not in that room. And Bill understands that. That's why he's the safety valve. That's why he's the integrity. He knows his audience. This stuff is going to scare them. And when it does, they'll run away or dismiss it. Not that I know anything about how that process works, of course, at all. Now, Holden rambles on and on, something I also don't do, confusing people, again, something I've never done, until he finally says, "Our new quest, like Freud, is to look past what we assume are obvious impulses." An older, bitter cop snaps back as he walks out on this nonsense. "Well, why didn't you just say that?" And it's true. That's what he needs to do to help them. As a student, he's in one role, but as a teacher, he's in another. So as he teaches them, he must also learn from them, and this is his first lesson. Dumb it down. Trust me when I say I know the pain of hearing this. But it's often true. Yet, like I might do at times with certain people resistant to my teachings, Holden gets defensive and says, "They don't want to learn." But again, Bill is there to hold the reins, to keep Holden on track. He says, "Just don't make it too complicated," which is, again, another form of saying, "Dumb it down." Yet Holden doesn't think his audience is lacking his intellectual perspective. He's expecting them to understand on his terms. He wonders aloud, "What are we even doing here?" He asks Bill, "What's wrong with complicated?" And Bill, again, makes it simple. There's complicated, and then there's too complicated. So Holden thinks about it and asks what common ground he has with all of these people. He mentions being in an elevator and how everybody is fine and relaxed when they all face the same direction. But if one person turns and faces the rest, going against the grain, everybody freaks out. He wonders how he could get everyone to face the same direction in his class, which is obviously what he was addressing with the analogy about the elevator. He's that one guy, facing the back of the room, facing the back of the elevator, while the rest of them are facing the front and wondering why the hell he is so insistent upon doing this. And of course, he freaks them out with it. It leaves the two parties segregated from one another. There is no understanding. So what will bring them together? The answer, of course, is going to be down in the abyss. Holden asks what they all have in common, what unites them, and even more specifically, what keeps them awake at night? And the answer to that, for these cops, is the pursuit of the monster. That's what he needs, to lure the monster up from the abyss and show them. So Holden goes back to class and puts something new at the front of the room that is certain to get the attention of the other cops. Charles Manson. We see Manson's crazed face on a slideshow. Now, Manson is the guy facing the other way. He's the one facing the back of the elevator. He's the freak. He's the opposition. And they hate him. So here's the problem. If you bring the monster up from those depths for the purpose of enlightenment, breaking down his evil motivations to human vulnerability, then the conduit for doing so, as Holden is about to learn the hard way, is just like Debbie told him. Empathy. And it's in this moment of profound realization that Holden Ford is left with a question that he is seemingly unable to answer. How do I get my audience to feel empathy for Charles Manson? Holden Ford realizes the greater goal is not changing himself, but transforming all of them. Because in truth, he has no idea how to do it. So moving forward, the question he needs to ask is this: how do I get them to follow me? It's in this moment that Holden realizes you can't be the person at the front of the elevator, standing in front of the door and keeping everyone stuck. You have to be the guy who earns their trust so that you can turn around and lead them out of that place to freedom.